Welcome to DB. I am Jill Marie. I'm the manager of the center. I'm dressed in yoga clothing. That's why I'm not dressed up right now. So I always forget to say that. So I thought I'd walk in with my yoga clothes to say, we have yoga at 5:30 on Mondays. So you can actually go do that and then come to class, and you can sit on the floor then because you'll be all relaxed. And it's donation only. Which leads me to donation only for classes. So we do everything here on a donation basis. You could probably do the speech by now. which is quite unusual. So I know a lot of you from high school tonight, you don't really need to hear about all this. But for everybody else, it's quite unusual around the world, not just here, but all the FPMT centers. We are either one or two, I don't know how many more, that do not charge for classes. So everybody else charges for classes and modules. So you're very lucky to be here tonight, which also leads that it's not just free, it's donation only. So if you're moved by the Spirit, you may use one of the boxes out front. You can give online. You can text give, which is a pretty fun way to do things. Erin is your program assistant tonight. Yes, you probably met her. She's amazing. She does great things to support this class and keep it all cooking right along. Don has been doing this so many times that I bet he doesn't even know how many times he's been through how to develop bodhicitta. Yeah. So he probably has bodhicitta by now because he's taught it so much, right? I want to. That's the goal. That's why we're here. So this is like number, 10? So you're getting up there. Okay, cool. So persevere and keep going. What else am I supposed to say? I always forget. I go out and go, oh, I should have said that. Oh, so the other classes. I don't think it's starting tomorrow. Typically it starts tomorrow, but it's next week is Discovering Buddhism with...
Oh,
who's doing this one?
It's Karen Mastriani.
Oh, Karen.
Buddhism in a Nutshell.
Buddhism in a Nutshell. So that's a really great class if you haven't attended that. And then after 5 weeks go, then we start back with Meditation 101, and that's how the year rolls out. So that's the format for that. Wednesday nights are a little bit higher level with Geshe Gelug. So if you ever just want to pop into that, too, it's a really great way to get some teachings from a high, very high-level teacher. And by the way, put your cell phones on on mute. Or we like to call it, put them on meditate. Miranda's running in here going, that's my phone! Okay, so that's everything. Welcome to the class. I'm just here to say hello and be one of the faces of the center for you. We are open during the week. That's what I always forget to say. And that you may come in and use this facility right now to meditate and to have a cup of tea and enjoy the library and the bookstore especially will be open for you. So have fun tonight with Don. He's amazing.
Good evening. So some of you are used to seeing me because, as Jill mentioned, I am the program assistant for this whole Discovering Buddhism series, which is modules that we have at the center, 13 modules. So we're on 10 of 13, but if you've never done them before, no problem at all. It's great that you're here tonight because starting at the beginning of a module is really nice. And I figured this module would attract a few new people. Don, we also have a good number of high school students here tonight. So totally adapt everything you're going to say to that. welcome, Athens High School. And so if you do the whole cycle of all 13 classes, it lasts a little more than 26 months. And then there's a 14th module of integrated practice that you need to start as soon as you can do it. So there's a new module every odd month on Mondays. We have some holidays and some weeks off at the end of a module. So like I said, 10 of 14, start anywhere you want, and get whatever out of it that you can. I am holding a mic not just so that you can hear me, but because we stream this and we want people online to be able to hear us. So that means if you ask a question, we're going to give you the mic. Otherwise, it's totally out of context for the people who are streaming, and we miss it on the recording. So I will bring a mic to you if you have a question. For our streaming friends out there, we are going to be watching a video tonight, and when we start watching that video, Brian's going to post the link to it, so you might want to watch that on your own, not live streaming the video that we're streaming over the internet. If you go to the Kadampa Center website, Beginner Programs, Discovering Buddhism Material, you can get the handout for this class. And our homework is on paper, so I'll scan it and post it up there so you guys can also do the homework. And there's also a link to the video we'll watch tonight there. So the handout, and since it's the first class, we have to explain a few things. We won't get right into it. The handout tells you the classes, readings, and books, how to get those things for this Kadampa Center version of this class. You come here or you stream it online and you do the readings that are on this handout and then you read the books that are on this handout. And then if you want to get really into it, you do the next level of requirements, which are the FPMT requirements. That's our parent organization. And then you do full days of meditation and an online exam. And I can help you access any of that. We stay after class, a few of us, till at least 9:15 or so, and kind of talk about the class and talk about what's going on. And if we're trying to finish something, help each other out. So please feel welcome to day if you would like any of that. Yeah, you can read what else is on here. At the end of this class, whoever wants to help, we put the Gampa back in order for how it was before I got here this morning and changed it all up, how it usually is if you're here on other days. And I got to mention one more thing. There is a compassion workshop coming up. Compassion cultivation training. It's on Sundays from 1:30 to 3:30. I think there are 8 of them. It's from March 18th to May 13th. So definitely look into that. This class is about compassion. This workshop is about compassion. You'll get it all. It's supposed to be a very well put together class. I read the book by Thupten Jinpa, a very good book, and he's the one involved with the course, so should be excellent. Any questions that everybody wants to know the answer to? Great, I'm done.
Question that everybody wants to know the answer to.
Well, yeah.
Well, you got the dates are in the handout for the class, right?
Yes.
Yep. So there's one day after Easter where we're not going to be here, Easter Monday. And I'd like for people to, I'd like for everybody to be sitting in the horseshoe, if you don't mind. I'm not trying to be too picky, but do you mind moving forward? You can sit on the ground, on the floor in the horseshoe, or you can sit in a chair, but I'd like, it's much more, keeps the energy a little bit more focused, or at least my energy. So we'll start out with just a little introduction to the class, and then we'll do the video will be an introduction. Then we'll talk a little bit about bodhicitta, and then particularly about one meditation, which I think is maybe might be the most important one. Could be in your whole life, but it's a very cool meditation called equanimity. So we'll do that one and talk about how to do that. I find it really helpful when I'm having an issue with anybody, particularly body, person. It's really helpful that way. So let me see who's here now. How many people are doing the whole DB thing, the whole DB cycle? All right. So you've been to all the classes up until now. Is that what you're saying? But you're starting now and within
a few modules.
Pardon?
A few modules.
Okay. Well, you can jump in at any time, and then you know there's like all these different modules, and then if you start now, you can continue, and then there's a whole new cycle of discovering Buddhism. This has been going on to around 2000 at least. I think it's when early 2000s when we started. But actually, we were doing our own version of discovering Buddhism here for probably 10 years before that. So anyway, I'm Don Brown. I've been involved with Kadampa Center since the inception back in the day. And Yeah, and I've been teaching Discovering Buddhism since the get-go. And the subject for the next few weeks is actually my favorite subject in all the Buddha Dharma. It's called Generating Bodhicitta. I wrote the word down, Bodhicitta. Now, it should probably have C-H-I-T-T-A, but that's how Lama Zopa, he always wrote it that way, Bodhicitta, but it's Citta. Bodhi means awakening, and Citta means mind. So the awakening mind, the mind of enlightenment, Bodhicitta is a Sanskrit term. Let me stop for a minute. Let me see. I asked how many people were in Discovering Buddhism. How many people are from Athens High School? Was that? Now, are y'all just here for one night or for the whole class? You gonna tough it out?
They're required to come once, and then.
Oh, then they can do what they want to. Okay, good. All right. Well, I know some people from Athens High School, so. Glad to have you here. And Buddhism, one of the things I appreciated when I first got introduced to Buddhism many years ago was, I'll tell you a little version of the story. I was in Kathmandu, Nepal, which where a lot of people don't even know where it is. It's this little country northeast of India. And but it's a really nice place to visit. Mount Everest is halfway in Nepal, halfway in Tibet or China now. But anyway, so I went there as a tourist back in the day and ended up in this Buddhist monastery and ended up signing up for this one-month meditation course, which also included, which I thought was just going to be meditation where you just sit down and space out and learn how to control your mind. I wanted mind control. That's what I was looking forward to, but it didn't happen. Two things that I heard from the get-go. One was that a meditator without instruction is like a rock climber without arms. So you need a basis. You need an instructional basis for it. You just can't jump in. You know, I mean, people. I've got apps on my phone for meditation. You know, just that I like to listen to. But you need to have some basic instruction, and then it's good to have somebody who's more experienced than you are to help you figure out what's going on. And the other thing that really appealed to me was that one of the monks there, they had about 20 Westerners who had taken monastic vows back at this time, which was in the late 70s, early 80s time frame. And he said, you know, the Buddha said, check out my teachings. He said, don't just believe it blindly, you know, this sort of blind leap of faith. He said, check it out. See if it makes sense. See if if it makes sense. Does it fit your experience? Does it harm you? Does it harm others? Like that. Really check it out. An example was like an assay's goal. You know, you might chop it up and put acid and different things on it to see if it's really gold. Then you say, okay, that's gold. And then, you know, in the same way with the Dharma, the teachings were not meant to be just blindly accepted or, oh yeah, those words are nice, but actually check these concepts. Check your meditation experience against the Dharma and see if it holds up. If it fits, if you find that the information, you know, makes sense, like I said, doesn't harm you, doesn't harm others, and you want to adopt it, then by all means do it. But if you don't want to, you can set it aside. I recommend not throwing it away, but, you know, set aside what doesn't make sense to you. The whole point of Buddha Dharma is to transform our hearts and minds so that we can experience our full potential, not in some future lifetime, but actually now. But it's going to take work. You know, we have pills. You know, I love pills. I mean, my daytime job is as a family doctor, so I like medicine. I don't I'm not a pill pusher, but I have to write scripts all the time. Lots of Prozac and Zoloft and Celexa and you name it, different antidepressants and stuff. But this is not that. This takes much more work than just a pill. The, you know, the medicine that you have to take is the Dharma. And so we're gonna talk about the important, you know, the essence of the Dharma, which I think the bodhicitta is really the essence of the Buddha Dharma. The text that I recommend people read is the one online. There's a lot of things that you can read, but this one is pretty easy. Is that on here, Aaron? That yeah, How to Generate Bodhicitta by Rupa Rinpoche. Okay, I've got it on my Kindle on my iPhone, and it's not very long, so I figured it wouldn't be overwhelming for people to read this. This man was a phenomenal teacher. I think part of this video will include some of his teachings, but anyway, he's a great teacher, and I met him one time in India, and I don't think I got much, maybe a little snippet of teachings from him, but he was really old when I met him. But he had, the story was he was in a Chinese prison for 20 some years, tortured I'm not going to say every day, but tortured, cattle prodded, all kinds of stuff, and saw lots of his friends and fellow Tibetans being probably killed. I'm sure he did. And lived through all of that, and he came to Dharamsala, India. He was able to get away and come to India, and he said that during all of the torturing that he went through, he said his mind never got upset or disturbed. So how in the world can somebody actually be going through that? But he basically said what he was able to do was when situations came and a negative mind state arose, he was able to go into his Dharma medicine cabinet and pull out the teachings on impermanence or the teachings on compassion or the teachings on karma, and was able to understand the situation in a way that would free his mind up and not go into a negative mind state. So we're going to talk about a little bit about all those things, and if you have questions later on, we can deal with it. But let's start out with, I want to read, actually I'm not going to do that, since we have the video tonight. So I would like for people to read the three principal aspects of the path, because it's good to read a Lamrim text before you do your meditation. We'll start next week with doing that, but that covers the three principal aspects of the path to enlightenment. Okay, it recovered, and those three principal aspects, and several people, I know people here know it, but one of them is called renunciation. What is that? It's like it's having compassion for yourself. It's the determination. Another way we talk about it, though, is like realizing that the situation we're in, with the kind of mind we have, which clings to everything being delicious and pushes everything that's not fun and good and happy, we fear things that are not pleasant, and we crave everything in the world that's delicious. And because deliciousness happens, but bad things happen too, if we're craving this and fearing this, we're never going to be happy, are we? Our mind is always going to be disturbed because we're in a state of flux all the time. Good things happen, bad things happen, and we have to be able to kind of go with the flow. So, renunciation really is this determination to be free, but it's based on realizing the situation that we're in and having enough compassion for yourself to determine to be free. Say, I want to be free of suffering and the causes of it, and that there's a possibility, that's the Buddhist claim. So you actually put yourself into a process of training your mind, training your mind to be free of suffering. Then the second principal aspect of the path, which we'll talk about, is bodhicitta, the awakening mind. What does that mean? There's actually two parts to it. You can think of it like this. In terms of medicine, I was trying to explain it to one of my daughters when I was driving. I had to drop her off at dance class on the way over here. And I asked her what bodhicitta was. And she said, I know it, but I can't remember it. You've told me a lot of times. But it's kind of like if you go to medical school, for example, if you want to be a doctor, not everybody wants to be a doctor for the same reason, but let's say you want to do something good. Medicine's just an example of one profession. Okay, I want to heal people and I want to, you know, make a difference in their lives and do something worthwhile and that's meaningful. And I want to help people. Okay, well, you can want that. When you're in high school, you can think, oh, that's great. But what's missing? The training. Haven't done the training. Haven't got yourself in a position where you could actually be trained to do that. So, you know, bodhicitta's like that. I must become enlightened, you know, in order to help others. I must, it's actually the other way around. I must help others. How can I do that? Get enlightened. Get enlightened? How do I get that? I practice renunciation, compassion for myself. Bodhicitta, which is really compassion for others. I must become enlightened in order to help others. And then the third of the three principles is called wisdom. And it's understanding that we are constantly creating our reality. There's, you know, wisdom is not just knowledge. It's not just knowledge of, you know, some mathematical formula. You know, smart people can be really smart but have not a lot of wisdom. You know, wisdom is the crucial thing that we need to develop. And in a 25 words or less definition of wisdom, it's as if, let's just go with this, it's as if there's a blank screen in our world and our mind is projecting onto that screen our life. Now, the film for this, or the digital bytes that create this image on the screen, are our former actions of body, speech, and mind, our karma. Okay? So karma and emptiness. So things are empty. There's no inherent reality that exists independent of my mind labeling it. And that's a lot to take in. There's nothing out there that exists independent of my mind labeling it. And so the easy way to think about it is there's a blank screen and my mind is projecting my life. If I'm suffering, if I'm depressed, it's the karma from the past ripening, that usually harming others is ripens in suffering. If we want the future projection to go well, then we have to behave in a good way. We have to practice virtue. We have to avoid harming others, avoid harming ourselves, have compassion and wisdom and kindness. All those positive states of mind plant seeds on the mind stream that ripen into happiness. So we actually can shape our future. Our world is being created with our mind. And so this class, we don't get this growing up. You know, you get math and science and all that kind of stuff. But it's so obvious. It's so obvious that our mind creates happiness and suffering, isn't it? It's not a secret. But we don't think that we can do anything about it. We think that we're stuck with this mind. But the Buddha, 2,500 years ago, said, look, no, this mind is in a constant state of flux. It can be shaped. We can turn our mind into anything. We can become become an enlightened being. We can become an arahant. We can just become happier human beings in this life. Or we can become the worst terrorist, you know, mass killer. It really depends upon the mind of the choices that we make. And, you know, so this is all about choices and learning how, if you don't know how to meditate, it's virtually impossible to make new choices without having mindfulness. You know, our mind is, when a wave is breaking, when the wave of anger is breaking, how many people can, like, stop that? Very few. It's very difficult to do. So what we need to do is train ourselves in meditation to notice what's going on in our mind, our feelings, our thoughts, and all this going on in our internal world. And then when it's going in a direction toward that's going to cause suffering and more problems, we can interrupt it. And when it's going in a direction that is positive, we can support it. The crucial part, meditation, real quickly, is just it just means building up beneficial habits of mind. Nothing more. Nothing mystical about it. Building up beneficial habits of mind. So just sitting around thinking that you hate somebody and just thinking about, I hate this person, I hate him, whatever, and you just meditate on all their bad qualities, that's not what we're talking about here. That's not meditation. It is meditation, but it's not the kind we're talking about. So let's just spend a couple of minutes just sitting in quiet, meditative posture. And some of you are very flexible. All the high school students are on the floor, at least I think all of them are. So if you feel like sitting down on the floor, you can, or you can just sit in a chair. If you sit in a chair, it's best if you sit with your feet flat on the floor and your back up, not necessarily sitting back in the chair. And the typical posture, if you can sit cross-legged, like half lotus, full lotus, whatever is comfortable for you, that's good. If not, you just put your feet on the floor. You want your... Now, some people, they are better off just closing their eyes to begin with. So maybe you do that. Just close your eyes or leave them. Later on, when you learn how to meditate a little bit better, you want to leave your eyes slightly open so you can let the light in, because it keeps you alert. But now you may get distracted if you let the light in now. And then the chin is slightly tucked in. The tongue is on the roof of the mouth, so any saliva can drain down the back of your throat. The shoulders are kind of, you're in a neutral position. You're sitting up. You want your chest to kind of open up a little bit. And your hands are in your lap. The left hand, right hand on top of the left, thumbs touching, kind of forming a triangle. And ideally, the thumbs can touch about the level of the navel. The hands are not out here. They're up close to your abdomen. And the arms a little bit away from your body allow a little ventilation, particularly if you're going to sit for a long time. And then you just, even the sitting in this posture has quieting effect on the mind. Now, start out with a couple of exaggerated breaths, deep in and deep out, and then let your breathing settle back down. Now, silently, as you breathe in, I want you to label that in-breath 1. So you can do this as I'm talking. So breathe in, think 1. Out, 2. In, 3. Out, 4. In, 5, 6 and 7, out 8 and 9, and out 10. And now start over again at 1 and 1. Out 2, and so on. And do that silently in your mind up to 10. If you get lost, you go back to 1. So the attitude, the motivation that we're going to listen to the video and do the rest of the practices tonight is this awakening mind, this thought that I must become enlightened in order to help all living beings. And that sounds so far out there for most of us. It's just, oh, that's impossible. How can anybody do that? And that's not the attitude we need to bring to this. We need to understand that we have the potential to develop our good qualities endlessly and to eliminate our faults and have some, you know, confidence in ourselves and our potentials. And we realize that everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. We're all equal in that really important way. You know, you go to work tomorrow, or you look at your family, individuals, people in your school, wherever you are. You just look in their eyes, and you know something really intimate about them, that everything they do 24/7 is dedicated to finding happiness and avoiding suffering, something we all share equally. Where they do exactly the same in this important way. My happiness is not more important than your happiness, nor is yours more important than mine. We all, you know, we all equally want it. And that in Buddhism, we say that the cause of all of our problems is self-centered selfishness. Anger, hatred, sexual misconduct, you know, harsh, frivolous speech, lying, slanderous speech, greed, hatred, and ignorance. Every negative mind state is caused, and the actions that follow are caused by self-cherishing selfishness. That's like that's the devil, if you want to, and it doesn't live out there with, you know, horns and a pointed tail. It's right in our mind, sort of right in our heart. It's that self-centered, selfish attitude that drives our lives most of the time when we're honest with ourselves. And the cause of all happiness is cherishing others. The cause of all happiness is focusing Self-tenor is selfishness. The energy is like sucking in. Cherishing others is the energy going out. So cause of all happiness is cherishing others. And then we did make a determination to exchange the self-centered, selfish attitude for the attitude that cherishes others. So now we're going to become someone who cherishes others. That's the prevailing thought in our mind. It motivates all the actions of our body, speech, and mind is cherishing others. And then we go, well, I would love to be able to help others find happiness. In fact, we make a determination. It's called universal responsibility, the supreme wish. But it's this attitude where we make the determination that we are going to help every living being eliminate all the suffering and its causes, and then guide them to their own supreme happiness, guide them to helping them achieve their own potentials. And we make that determination to do that ourselves. That's the important part of this meditation on developing bodhicitta, is we take personal responsibility for the happiness of all living beings, which sounds like that's too much. But it's an attitude that leads to all of the great realizations in the path. And then we make the determination to actually train ourselves. We can't do it now, but we can do it. We have the potential to do it. We have the potential to guide others to happiness, all the way to supreme enlightenment, and we have to train ourselves. So we say the bodhicitta is the fallout of this meditation, where we have this determination to achieve our full potential as Buddhas, as enlightened beings. Why? Solely to be a perfect guide, a perfect servant, a perfect helper for all living beings. I must become enlightened in order to help others. I must help others. And the method to do that is to develop my potentials and become enlightened. And the byproduct of this path, of this process of inner development, of helping others, is that our own needs, our own welfare, our own happiness is taken care of along the way as a byproduct of our dedication to serving and helping all living beings. It's what we always wanted. It just happens. It just happens as a byproduct. Okay, so you can relax your concentration. And now let's watch the video. If you have any questions about the video, just we can bring them up at the end. Can we turn the air conditioner on, or just get, I'm a little warm in here. Maybe I should take my blanket off. Everybody will go to sleep. That's what I was worried about. Yeah, that's good. So any comments about what you saw or questions? I enjoyed it. I hadn't seen that video in a long time. Any questions? To be sure, when you go back to Athens High School, what was it like over there on Monday night at Kadampa Center? You know, go ahead.
Did you know Rinpoche
personally? I met him. I didn't. Yeah. Well, he's a teacher. You know, I've had many, many teachers, but you know, my principal teachers are Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa, and His Holiness, and you know, Geshe Gelug, you know, is important to me too, of course. Yeah, Rupa Rinpoche, the older man at the end, he's pretty extraordinary. All right, so let's talk about. I think I had some teachings I was going to go over on the benefits of bodhicitta, but I think that's been more than covered by His Holiness Lama Zopa, and what I have to say is not all that interesting anyway, so we'll hold off on that one for right now. But let's talk about developing equanimity. That was the meditation I can't remember who talked about it, but anyway, you know, it is the foundation of developing bodhicitta. It's like if you want to build a palace of bodhicitta, you don't build it, you know, on a beach, you know, where the sands are shifting all the time. You want to get a firm foundation. So equanimity is the foundation of any practice, like the cultivation of compassion. Without this, forget about it. You only have compassion. Well, let's put it this way. How many people were, I mean, you guys are old enough to, maybe not, but, you know, when Saddam Hussein was killed, or, you know, some political figure that you don't like suffers, or anybody you don't like suffers, does that cause compassion to arise? No. It does not. If somebody you hate is suffering, it does not cause compassion to arise. You may actually experience joy. You know, like, he had it coming, you know, good, you know. But if you develop this sense of, this is what we were talking about, this sense of connection, where you feel, you know, you sincerely wish that others could be happy and have the causes of happiness. Well, there are people that we don't feel that way about, right? The so-called enemies, the people that we feel aversion toward, we don't feel that way toward them. When they suffer, again, we're pretty, you know, we don't, sometimes we even rejoice in their the bad things that happen to people we don't like. And the people that we love, when they suffer, it really touches our hearts. Okay, so this is a real important part of developing compassion. You can't just jump into it. You really have to train your mind systematically, and the foundation for it is equanimity. All right. So this practice, which is the you know, the whole palace of bodhicitta, all these 11 meditations that we're going to learn, are all the foundation is going to be the equanimity practice. So I'll just give you a version of it, and it makes perfect sense. But probably the best way to do it, talk about it, is just do it. So why don't you get in a meditation posture, and let's see, I might just sit on the floor. All right. Get yourself comfortable. So again, just get into this posture that is comfortable for you. Again, if you can sit cross-legged, that's great. I like to put something in my lap so my hands are resting on it, and form a little triangle with the thumbs at about the level of the navel. And the shoulders are sort of down and back a little bit. The chin's tucked down. The tongue is touching the roof of the mouth. The eyes are slightly open or gently closed. The lips are together, but just a real gentle, sort of soft face, like the face of the Buddha. And then you start out with the more exaggerated breaths, two or three of those, and then do your counting up to 10 once or twice to settle your mind. The one analogy that is given regarding bodhicitta is that the Buddha gave 84,000 teachings on how to subdue these sound like big numbers, but there's supposedly 84,000 delusions, and he gave teachings on how to subdue each of those delusions. But if you take all of the Buddha's teachings and you the essence of all of these teachings is the subject of this class is bodhicitta, how to develop bodhicitta. That's the essence. That's like if you churn milk and you get the butter, you know, that's like the essence of the milk is the butter. The essence of the Buddha Dharma is bodhicitta. And so, you know, if we don't even, I mean, a lot of people came here tonight had never even heard of this. No idea that this concept even existed. You know, that there is this, and that human beings, that there are people that have actually realized this, that developed this completely selfless attitude. A huge antidote to our self-cherishing selfishness. Just like an atomic bomb destroying our selfishness, this bodhicitta attitude. And we think we have forever to get our act together and to develop our mind. But our life is passing with every tick of the clock. It is so precious. Our life is so precious. And every moment, you know, some young people die before old people. You know, it's not a given. Our lives are very fragile, very precious, because we can use this time to develop our mind, transform our mind into this most powerful attitude called the Bodhi mind. So important. And the foundation for this whole practice of developing bodhicitta, to experience the essence of the Buddha Dharma, is this meditation on equanimity. So it's an equal-mindedness toward the three categories of beings. It's a level-mindedness, because if we have attachment to some and aversion to others, well, you know, compassion can arise. You know, we have to develop. We start out by just, you know, why cling to the ones that we're that you know, we so-called friends, and why push away and feel anger, aversion, or whatever toward the so-called enemies, and feel indifference toward the so-called strangers. So what you want to do is imagine somebody that's really annoying you right now. Imagine that they're to your right, sitting in front of you to your right, and then to your left is someone that you're attached to, that you think you can't imagine your life without that person. Could be family, could be anybody. And then in front of you is this faceless person, not really faceless, but in a sense faceless, because it stands for all countless other beings that we now call strangers, that we feel indifference toward. So we cling to the friend, we feel indifference toward the stranger, and the enemy we feel aversion toward. So you can see, with that kind of rocky mind, how can you possibly develop compassion, equal compassion for all living beings without discrimination? Can't do it, because we're already discriminating every second. We're constantly judging ourselves and others. So here's the technique is to, and there's several different lines of reasoning that we use, but some of them that, and you just have to find what works for you, but I personally find the one where you focus on somebody you dislike and that you feel aversion toward, I find it so helpful, because you think of this person, okay, this person that I feel aversion toward, where's that aversion coming from? You know, what is aversion? What's caused this mind to arise? What did that person say or do that made me, that I'm not going to say made me, because that sounds like a victim statement, but they did something and I chose to label them as a person of aversion or an enemy or whatever, somebody I dislike being around. That's coming from my own mind. They did something. I interpreted. My ego got offended. And so I labeled them enemy or whatever. And that label is just a label. But look how much energy we put into it. And it could change a few kind words, just a few kind words from the so-called enemy. They can become a friend. We've all probably had that experience at least once, where somebody we didn't particularly like or, you know, whatever, we said something, you know, a conversation came up, something got cleared up, and next thing you know, they're like our friend. They're over here in the category of friend. And from a Dharma perspective, this is something we talk about in Buddhism, is that the real cause of this person harming me was my own former karma, the karma that I created in the past. They're like a stick. If somebody hits you with a stick, you don't get angry at the stick, you get angry at the person wielding the stick. In the same way, my own past former harmful actions, you know, karma, what goes around comes around. So this karma, in some former lifetime, I harm this person, now they're harming me. This karma is coming back around. And so we can see that there, you know, Shantideva said, and gave that example, said, don't get angry at the stick, get angry at the person. We get angry at the person. Well, the real source of the suffering is our own self-cherishing, selfish mind that created the karma in the first place for this negative experience to happen. So we have to look at our own mind and heart. We're not a victim of that person. This is the fruition of our own former actions coming back to us in the form of harm. And furthermore, one of the most important Dharma realizations on the path is patient endurance. Who teaches us patience? It's not our friends. Our friends don't teach us patience. That's why we call them friends, probably, because they don't give us a hard time. But here is this great gift called the so-called enemy, who's like testing us, giving us an opportunity to see if we really have developed any patient endurance. And not only that, they will generously point out our faults. They're very happy to point out places that we need to work on. We usually dismiss it. But they are often brutally honest. If we listen to what they say, we can learn. So we develop patient endurance and dependence upon the enemy. Without patience, there are no bodhisattva perfections. There's no bodhisattvas. There's no enlightenment. We need people like this to give us a hard time to develop and strengthen our inner qualities. And furthermore, and this is the hardest one to sort of wrap your arms around, you might say, your mind around, but is that in past lifetimes, all three categories of beings, but we're focusing on this so-called enemy, we talk about countless former lifetimes in Buddhism, that the mind of this life was preceded by the mind of a former lifetime and a former lifetime and so on. Many, many countless previous lifetimes. Well, in every lifetime we had a mother. And so this being who we label as our so-called enemy has been our mother, has been as kind to us as our mother of this life. And so again, this takes a little bit of you have to be a little bit creative mentally, just to play with this notion of beginningless mind and countless lifetimes and countless mothers, and this being has been my mother numerous times, and every lifetime has been kind to me, may have been mean to me, but the most important, the relationship that sticks is the kind one, because that one's the one that's based on wisdom, not the one that's based on delusion. So this being that we label an enemy has been so kind to me in past lifetimes. This lifetime, because of my own negative karma, they're harming me. And, you know, gives me a chance to purify my karma, gives me a chance to practice patient endurance. And just a few kind words, this person could be my new best friend, or at least a friend, or at least neutral. Possibility. Just think about it. And when you do that, allow the, see if you can soften the feeling of aversion that you have toward this person, this being. Let go of the anger, let go of the resentment, let go of that negativity that's really hurting you, not them. Just let go and develop equal-mindedness toward that being. And if you look over here at the friend, the person that you call your friend, well, that relationship again is based on a what? They're our friend because they've been kind to us, they've said nice things, and they often are not willing to, you know, give us the tough love that we really need. They pander to our egos sometimes, which is not good. If our egocentricity is our worst enemy, and this person is like a friend of our ego, is the friend of our worst enemy really our friend? Something to think about. And that relationship is changeable. How many times have we had good friends that are now, we don't even see them anymore. We hardly ever see them, we hardly ever talk to them, or they become an enemy. It's totally unstable. Not stable, just like the enemy relationship is not stable. This one is changeable. The so-called friend, you know, is in our past lifetimes has been, you know, incredibly mean to us. But in this lifetime, because we have the good karma to have a friend like this, but we don't need to cling to our friend. It's the clinging to the friend that causes the problem, right? We exaggerate their positive qualities, and we cling to them. And we don't see that they also have a negative side. We can't let go. We can't see that the relationship is changeable. And it will change. It'll change. All your relationships that you have now that are good, they'll change. Some people will disappear. Some people will become your enemy. Some people will just, may always be friends, but they'll change. So again, try to let go. Feel a sense of letting go of the clinging, this label of friend and the clinging that goes on along with it, and develop an even-mindedness toward the friend. And then you turn to the stranger, and that's the vast majority of beings on the planet, including the animals and the insects and the fish in the sea and all that. Countless living beings, all of them that have consciousness, sentient beings that are capable of feeling, you know, they all are just like I am. They're just like the friend and the enemy. They want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. And a few kind words to a stranger, they become a friend. A few mean words to a stranger, they become an enemy. The relationship is totally, again, not fixed. It's not fixed. That label, stranger, is not a fixed thing. It could change. And in past lifetimes, the so-called stranger has been incredibly kind, but also difficult. But again, the relationship that sticks, that dominates, is the one in the lifetime when they were kind to me. Because in the lifetime when they were mean to me, meanness and negativity is based on delusion. It's not based on wisdom. It's not based on truth. So the true relationship, the valid relationship, is the one where they were kind to me. So again, nothing fixed. Nothing. This label is not so solid anymore. We just let go, and try to look at the three categories of beings as equal, as like level ground, smooth, like an equanimous attitude toward the three labels, three categories of beings: the friends, the strangers, and the so-called enemies. All labels, all changeable. Okay, now you can relax your concentration and move your body and open your eyes. And so at the end of the teachings, every week, you know, at the beginning we'll always do some sort of motivation, and at the end it's really important, like something positive has been generated here tonight, I think. I'm saying, and you know, the Dharma teachings. So we've generated collectively and individually what we call merit, positive potential, good karma. It definitely will ripen in happiness in the future. So what we want to do is dedicate that virtuous energy not only to our happiness, but the happiness of all living beings. That's bodhicitta. So for just a minute, just imagine that whatever you've generated in your own heart and mind, you know, just kind of beams out to your family and the people that you'll be seeing later on tonight, and the people that you work with in your community and beyond. They encompass the whole planet and then even beyond there. Okay, thank you. So there's a handout, homework, yeah. I don't like to use the word homework. It's a negative connotation. Opportunity for the, you know, development. But anyway, there's we talked about reading the three principal aspects, then practicing this equanimity meditation. Those of you who are committed to developing bodhicitta, this is really, really important to do that. And then this book is online, and it's free. Yeah. Anything else?
If you can't find the book based on the description on your handout, just go to the page where all the materials are, and I added one more link to it. And if you're streaming, the homework's posted. It says homework one, and then here's a link to that book. So you can find it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Athens High School. Thank you for coming. And maybe we'll see you again.